Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, hi, assalamu alaikum and wagwan. My name is Alia Hasina. I'm your host and baby mother of Black Curatorial, a space where Black curators and creatives experiment and play. And I really love chatting to people about the little things we do in pursuit of being loving. And so Notes on Loving, this podcast, aims at looking at perspectives of implementing love into everyday practice. I'm a big believer in loving being an intentional action. So on this podcast, we view love by bell hooks' definition. Love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. Love is as love does. Love is an act of will, namely, both an intention and an action. And for that love to be worth it, it has to be a combination of care, commitment, knowledge, responsibility, respect, and trust. And so hold tight, bell hooks, one time. This podcast came to life after I directed a short film in 2020 called Loving. It was commissioned by Sloghouse and it kind of explored mine and my homegirl's thoughts on learning to love in your 20s. We had so many stories that we kind of had to find another way. And so the podcast was born to continue talking about how people learn to love or built up ways of loving in their 20s. And so over the course of this series, we'll delve into what it really looks like to put loving into practice from the perspective of the guests that we have on the show. And so, with that in mind, today's podcast, we have a really, really exciting guest. On today's episode, we're really excited to delve more into the ways that men love in the UK and some of the conditions that have created masculine attitudes towards love. I had a chat with one of my homegirls recently, and we were talking about how whenever we go to panels about love, it's always women having conversations. There's never necessarily a male or a masculine voice. And so this brilliant guest, the one and only Alex Holmes, has been doing a lot of work looking into how men love, what belonging means. Alex Holmes is a clinical hypnotherapist, therapeutic coach, writer, well-being consultant. He is a master of getting to the core of the people he works with by speaking to their innermost selves. His work is rooted in supporting men and boys with their transitional periods of life, from boyhood to manhood, into fatherhood, and grieving the moments that allow us to change, transform, and develop into human becomings. Author of Time to Talk, How Men Think About Love, Belonging, and Connection, he introduced the idea that there is safety in men's healing practices to become fully integrated into life, love, and belonging. He hosts Time to Talk podcast, which you guys definitely need to listen to, 10 out of 10 would recommend, getting to the core of men's mental health and unpacking masculinity in the ways we don't usually hear on podcasts with men. One time for Alex Holmes. Bob on, Alex. How are you doing?
Wow. Hearing the bio read back to me, that is so wild. Sometimes I'm just like, you know, because it's funny because you write these things and you put it up and you just leave it and then you never really consider how people can take that.
How they perceive
and
it.
And then when I'm listening to it, I'm like, wow, who that person?
It's you. It's you.
But yeah, no, I'm good. Thank you for inviting me here.
No, thank you for coming. I'm really, really excited to have this conversation today. I feel like I've known you for a long time, but we've always had like mutuals. And so I don't think we've ever really sat down and had like a proper conversation.
No, we've never done this.
No, it's
and look
mad.
At us doing it in public.
Wow. How did we get here?
That's how you did me. Okay. But it's true. I think we've always known that there's a conversation to be had.
Yeah.
But we've never sat down and actually had that. And I think that this is going to be an interesting one.
But I feel like you've been in my life for a very long time because of your podcast, Mostly Lit, from time ago.
Yeah.
Like, hold tight. all the bookish babes.
Yeah.
Because every time I used to, there was like one of the first podcasts where I like actually saw my bookish self like represented and also talking about pop culture. So I remember just always listening to that. And then I think we'd met in person at an event and I was like, oh, that's Alex Reed.
Yeah. Alex Reed is no longer.
I know,
and that's
right?
So funny because every time I think about it, that's how some people have remembered me.
Yeah.
Or how they first encountered me. And it's no longer who I am or was at the time.
What was that transition like?
What do you mean? As in why?
Yeah.
So I think at the point of when we started doing those podcasts in the early days in the UK, it was like nobody knew what these podcasts were, what they could be. And there were very few black podcasts, very few black voices. It was at the apex of the, like, there's a first generation of podcasters, I think of it as, and then there's a second wave, and then, you know, then there's a third wave, and then now we have what we have. And I was going in there, and I was just thinking, all right, I'm working as a journalist. I don't know how public I can be, like, outside of that job. Like, do I want to have my full name out there? Does it make sense? And I remember just one of my friends was just like, you know, really obsessed with the way I read stuff.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, you should be like, oh, Alex reads this, da 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 da. And I was like, actually, let me just take that and then just kind of run with that for a while as a sort of a persona, as sort of a moniker or vibe or something that is just kind of being my creative self. And then my real self was somewhere else.
Mm.
And then I got to a point, I think it was 2018, going into 2019. Probably even before that, when I was just like, there's no point in those two being separate.
Yeah.
I'm Alex Holmes, and everything that is contained within that is who I am at any given point. Things change, things grow, things have stopped, you know? So I just figured Alex Reed has to go. It doesn't make any sense keeping him anymore.
No, I hear that. So, I hear that.
Yeah.
I think it's so beautiful to see that transition as well. And even just like when I was obviously not stalking your website, but like preparing and researching, just like from a Twitter space into an embodied like person, you can see a part of that transition. I think it's really, just speaks to like the multifacetedness of when we start to walk into ourselves.
For sure.
And not be as scared. Yeah. I still don't use my surname publicly, but y'all don't need to know about it. I've got a couple of questions today, and I really wanted to chat firstly about what your definition of loving is. I know it can be so open, and so many people have different perspectives on what that means, but I'd love us to jump in with that.
When thinking about loving, the first thing I think about is courage. And the first thing I think about is that holding and beholding of another person, you know?
What?
And I think that's something that I've really had to sit with, because I sat down and I think that it was, you know, at the end of 2019, the beginning of 2020, and I sat there and I can't remember what I read or who I was reading, but I sat in silence for a while. Just meditating on some, you know, when some of these writers just drop bars, and you're just like,
bruh.
And you're like, whew,
and your whole life is just
my chest,
spinning.
That's usually bell hooks,
bruh. The first chapter, not even, it was the preface, and I'm on the floor bawling, insane.
And it probably, you know, and it probably was bell hooks that did this to me. But I think that I looked at it and I thought to myself, what does it mean to be held? And then what does it mean to behold somebody?
Wow.
Right? And I think that when I think of loving, I think that it's that notion and that feeling of being both contained by another, but set free by another and able to just be yourself, right? And you can just be held there.
Yeah.
Like literally held there as all of who you are. That doesn't necessarily infringe on another person, and another person doesn't necessarily infringe on you, but being held authentically as who you are and everything that you contain and all the things that you bring to the table, to the space, to the event, to the world.
And that person accepts it as well. I think something that I've seen quite a lot within friendship groups is that we're kind of in a culture now that makes people so disposable. Mm. But they do one thing that upsets us and it's like, oh, well, that's a wrap. Like, they're cancelled or we're getting rid of them or they can't be in my life because they told me this, this and this about myself. And it's kind of like, I have a couple chargies who are like, real ones, where I'm like, you do things that piss me off, off. But the love is like, we're doing life together.
Right.
And so you'll find a way to resolve conflicts. You'll hold that person in whatever they are going through because you understand that, one, they are a person and that they are also looking for their soul the same way that you are.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that that felt really, really freeing to hold and behold.
For sure. And that understanding that things begin and things endure and things end, I think that's just...
Boy.
It just has... These are just the three phases of life that we go through.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not this, you know, it's not... For me, it's not the vibe to just cut people off just because they've said something, or, you know what I mean? And but it's also understanding about when things are ready to come to that end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in people come back round again.
Same.
Everyone is developing. You know, sometimes some people probably weren't even supposed to be there for that long with you, you know? And I think that we just need, I feel like we just need to be a bit more accepting of that.
I agree.
And be able to communicate.
I think there's a practice of safety in it as well. Mm-hmm. So if someone is going through something and you're going through something healing-wise and you can't be in that space with them anymore because it's not safe for you or it's not safe for them because you continue to trigger each other in ways which is not healthy, then, like, those things need to disappear in order to maybe later on down the line they will do their healing at a different point and they will come back in. But I think that cyclical nature is a philosophy that I don't think we get as much within Western philosophy. It's very African, exactly, and mental. And I've been looking at some of the work of Sobhonfu Somme, The Spirit of Intimacy.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my Lord. Hold tight, Michelle Tiwo, who just randomly like dashed that book at me and was like, you need to listen to this.
Love them, love them.
No, for real, for real.
That book, I remember reading it straight after I finished writing mine. So when I finished, when I turned my book in and my body was a mess and like I'd been in this chair for so long, it was creaking, it was cracking, it said 30 is almost here,
oh,
baby.
Lord.
And I was just like, what do I need? And I went, I found this book, picked it up, and then I went, and I booked a hotel, and I just went there for like 2 days, and I just got the massages I needed, the things I needed, but also I spent time reading that book, and I'd love to know what you think about it as well.
So I think something that I was really drawn by was the aspect of communion, which I've said I have communion by bell hooks. But the spiritual resonance of community and what that does. And for those who don't know, Alia believes that the UK is spiritually barren. Teehee. And so understanding that whilst being here in what my friends call the belly of the beast made so much sense to not just the psychosis and mental illness that I see in our communities in the UK, but also... just how much our spirits and our bodies are yearning, whether our minds are aware of it or not. And I think that's what that book has really like left me with, is how much we need other people.
For sure. I think there was that bit where she was speaking and my son is... Like, your son is my son. Yeah, like, my sister is your sister. And I kind of posed this next bit to my family. And I was like, you know, my husband is your husband. And my cousin was like, no, they are not my husband. They are not, my husband is my husband. And I was like, but the wider understanding of that is everything you just said. It's like we so kind of, especially being, what's the word? Othered here, I suppose is the word. Being here. And kind of assimilating to the life here and thinking and understanding things to be the way they are. And actually, when reading The Spirit of Intimacy, I was thinking, wow, it could be so different. And this is why I'm so passionate about reframing and reimagining what it could be, because we are living in imaginations that were just never made to include us in.
Just some dusty white men from like the 1800s.
You know, it's an imagination posing anything that is other as a threat, but the threat does not exist. So you're just like, we are caught up in the psychosis of another person.
Of whiteness.
Right. And it's like, and then that has just persisted.
Yeah. But one thing that kind of popped up earlier when I was researching and learning a little bit more about developing loving ethics, so on and so forth, something that really struck me was that there isn't really a lot that's been written about healthy ways of loving for Black people, let alone by Black men or with a focus of Black men in particular. And in the UK, you're talking about, it might just be your book, Margie, I'm not going to lie. But I'm keen to kind of know what inspired you to contribute to the canon of writing on love as a Black man in Britain.
He was too stern to speak. no, I'm thinking because like when I was 18, 19, I don't know how you feel about this author, because I know there was a few issues with him, but Juno Diaz.
Yeah, people go through things.
Yeah, they do. And I read This Is How You Lose Her, and I read Drown, and I read The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, and I became obsessed with this man. I was like, you're West Indian, you're a Capricorn like me.
Come on.
You're like a writer, but you're writing about love authentically from a man's perspective, and from all of these added things into this pot of like stuff that you've, you know, coming and being othered and having all these really interesting bonds with people and then kind of perpetuating ideals and all these other things that were happening. And as we said, chaotic, like the union in the books. Is a chaotic man. But I began to sit there and I thought, like, I want to really engage in these conversations about love and belonging and connection. Yeah. And but I looked at it from a real emotional health perspective. I worked in journalism. I was a lifestyle writer for a while. And even before that, I just worked in general news and entertainment, and I'd spoken to so many people. And I found that when it came to men, we didn't have language. We didn't have a language for love.
Yeah.
Like we felt uncomfortable to sit there and talk about matters of the heart. There are the few. But then there are a few, and then, but we logicize it a lot. You know, it's very cerebral, it's very this. And to an extent, you know, somebody might be listening to me and might say, Alex, you sound very cerebral in this. But a lot of men are stuck in the headspace. And I started researching, started thinking, like, and then I started seeing more and more data of men taking their lives. That's the you know, largest cause of death in the UK for men. And then the second is like roadside accidents and other stuff is, you know, enacted by other people.
Yeah.
So murders and attacks and things of that nature. And then just general gender-based violence and all of this stuff. And I started seeing that and I was thinking, I'm listening to, obviously, Juno Diaz, but I'm listening to things like Martin Luther King's A Gift of Love. I'm listening to Maya Angelou all the time. I'm listening to Bell Hooks. I'm listening to all of these people. I'm listening to Neo Soul. I'm listening to R&B.
Come on.
I'm listening to Lover's Rock. I'm listening to all of this stuff where I know love is possible.
Yeah.
You know? We have Lover's Rock as a West Indian genre. Lover's Rock is
literally
there.
Called Lovers.
There. Lover's Rock.
We be rocking.
You know, and I sat there. I think a lot of the time when I was writing, I put on Barry's Hammond, or when I'm feeling really constricted and loveless, especially when it's directed to myself, I put on Barry's Hammond and I feel good, or Full Attention, or things of these, like those songs. And I'm just like, yes, I kind of like bring it brings me back.
Yeah.
Because I remember where I was when I first heard them, and then the lyrics kind of hit differently every time. And I just realized that there's all these men that are talking about it in music. Growing up, I say, if we talk about R&B, Usher, all these people, all these R&B artists, but it, something wasn't connecting. There were guys in my year who were, and I was at school, who were just like, oh, R&B is for women.
Oh, 100. It's a girl tune.
But then there's all these men singing it.
Yeah.
But yet these men are like, they're saying it's a girl tune, but you're running down girl to take them to these concerts.
Do you understand?
I was like, none of this makes sense. I grew up seeing my parents like slow dancing to Luther and all this stuff. I grew up to aunties and uncles doing the same thing, granny and granddads, and I just didn't see it written anywhere.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know what? It might be written somewhere. It might be there. I just want to write. And I think I just know what I want to write about. And so I just began writing about mental health first as the way in. And then I started just thinking about like love.
I'm really interested if there was ever a moment where your perception of love changed from those early recollections.
Yeah, I became really anti.
What?
There was a really tense period in my life in sixth form where there were a lot of relationships around me were fraying. And I could hear arguments all the time. There was a lot of death. There was a lot of unhealed people.
Yeah.
And people were processing their grief through their children.
Boy.
And I was just like, this is long. I just can't do it. Like, I'm very empathetic. I took on a lot of the emotional burden.
Yeah.
And I don't want to use the word burden, actually. I took on a lot of the emotional kind of life and energy, and I used it myself. I kind of prostrated myself as the sounding board that, like, when sound comes and then it transfers itself out again in a better way for each person. And it's just
the synthesizer.
That's it. And then what happens to me? I've just become that person that's ladled with the anger, with the grief, with the upset, with the pain and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's never joy, it's never excitement, it's always the hard stuff.
That's the hard stuff. And it sticks.
And
your
And I was holding that. And I remember I was holding that all the way through university, all the way through when I went to teach abroad. And it wasn't until I came back home, 2016, that I began to reckon with all of that.
Well,
I was back in the home. I was back in the room I'd inhabited since I was 14. But in that process, I had to understand who I was now.
Yeah.
Can I handle these conversations now? And so begins the journey. So yeah, it began with creating new friends, building new friendships. It began with going to therapy.
Mm.
And then it just started to create itself in ways, and I started to repair all of that loveless feelings of emptiness and hate. It was really a lot of hate towards myself and all of these other things, and then that kind of manifested in the way that I showed up for friends at the time, for family. It just wasn't great. So so it was a lot of return to self. I read this book called A Return to Love by Marianne Williamson. I began kind of really delving into that, and that's when I stumbled across All About Love, and I stumbled across, Spirit of
Intimacy.
And
it's a slippory slope.
It's a slippery slope, because once you're in there, you're in there.
Bar 10 times deep.
And you're like, how did I get here?
I know we've spoken about quite a lot so far, and really some really, really beautiful insights. Mm-hmm. I just want to take a quick second to talk about you being a published author. Oh my God. What was that process like of you've been a writer for a long time. You've gone through journalism, through lifestyle writing, podcasting, to have now written literature.
This is not the book I wanted to write, but it's the book I had to.
Oof, I know that's right.
And it began, it was this thing where I wanted to write a book of essays around masculinity. I wanted it to be like, you know, them deep essays, that Baldwin-esque kind of like, you know, the fire next time.
Come on.
You know, and then I would go to Paris and I'd sit there at Le Chateau Brasserie.
Smoke my cigarettes.
And I would smoke.
And drop knowledge on love.
And I'll smoke cigarettes and I don't smoke. And I would sit there and I would drink sherry and I'd be like, do you understand love as a man? No. And that's just not what happened. Because the pandemic came and said,
all out of God.
And said, boy, if you don't.
If you don't write this
ish. I wanted to write something like that. And I had all these ego-centered ideas around what it meant to write a book and write these things. And I was just like to myself, you know what? That's not what I'm supposed to write now.
Yeah.
I remember at the point of writing this book, I had no clinical training. I was in therapy. I had just come out of working full time. My grandma had just died. We had just entered into a global pandemic. All the work I had lined up cancelled.
Boy,
holidays. I ain't seen it since 2019. Dealing with a load of different stuff at home. A lot was happening. So the process was hard.
Yeah.
Because it's not what anybody expected it to be like as a process of me writing. And then when it was published, we were still in lockdown, so we couldn't do physical launches. And it kind of just was published, and it was published kind of quietly. That's what I'm like.
Yeah.
I enter quietly, leave quietly, you know?
Cool.
And I'm noticing that that's kind of, it's emblematic of who I am. But what it did do was it began something in me. The person who wrote this book is no longer the person who's sitting here looking at it now, you know? The person that you read or you listened to, same thing, is... like has been,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And when I was reading it over again today, I was thinking, wow, this is so interesting. This person is hilarious. Like, what is all this? So yeah, it was really nerve-wracking because it was putting myself out there in a way that I just wasn't necessarily used to. I wasn't used to being center stage.
Yeah,
I was always, as you know from earlier podcasts, I was always in a group. I was always among a team, always among a crowd, many siblings, many cousins, you know.
I hear that.
I was always that person. So to sit down and pen something that had, it was just me there.
Just Alex.
Just me. Which comes back to the name having to come back together. It was because of that, really. It was actually because of the book, too, as well. Actually, yeah, because they were thinking, they asked me, what do we put on the front? And I was thinking, I don't know what you put on the front. Can it just be question mark? And they were like, no, it can't be this. So, but yeah, very hard. I was in therapy as I was writing it. I needed to be.
Would you say the book was a kind of healing or
definitely,
a route to it?
Definitely helped me with my grief.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely helped me with my grief over my grandmother and the grief with all of the expectations I held for myself. Just, I think it was a perfect closing of my 20s.
I think your work is like truly multidimensional, and the focus on healing through hypnotherapy is something that is very new to the discourse us in the UK. Especially surrounding therapy in Black communities. And so what have you observed culturally that pushed you towards becoming a clinical hypnosis practitioner?
Ooh. I'll outline the process to you. So I write the book and I'm like, I want to do more. Two friends got sectioned in September 2020.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what to do. So I go into mental health first aid. So I'm like, I want to know more about this disorder, this syndrome, and how I can help in that way. Who to call, what to do, what to say, this stuff. And then I was like, okay, so this is good. And then I was doing my podcast at the time, and I was speaking to psychotherapists, and they were like, well, you know, if you want to help, mental health first aid's probably not going to be the kind of help that you want to give.
Yeah.
So have you ever considered being a therapist? And I was like, really? Because the way my therapist was holding my stuff, I was like, do I want to be holding it for everybody? Because I felt like I was doing that a lot, and I didn't
and
know
as a
how
teenager
I,
as well.
Yeah, and I didn't know how I could manage that. So that was really like, you know, shortness of breath, panicking. But I heard it. I'm the kind of person, when I hear things three times, I have to pay attention to what is being said to me. So I was like, okay, fine. Like, after the third guest was like, have you thought about... I was like, look, whatever the angels are trying to tell you, leave me alone, because I'm already on the websites looking. And then self-doubt came in. And then all of that anxiety came up. And I was like, you know what? I can't do that. So I went to train as a coach. A health coach, because I really wanted to know about the nervous system. I was really interested about the somatic feelings of trauma and all of that stuff. And what helped, you know, people call me wizard, because I'm like, you know, Harry Potter and all that stuff. And I like it always, I always have an answer for some sort of ailment or something. Like,
boy,
I did that for my granddad.
Come from granddaddy.
So I was doing that. And then again, I learned something about, we learned something about the therapeutic relationship. And I was like, God, what are you trying to tell me? Because I'm really out here not listening to you, but you keep mentioning things to me. So I saw a therapeutic relationship, started Googling some of the practitioners that were in on the module of the course that we had to read up on. Fell in love with the ideas, the theories around psychotherapy, the different sorts of them, the different methods and whatnot. And then somehow, out of nowhere, to this day, I have no idea where this course came from, but the course landed literally on my screen.
Mad up.
And it was like, oh, hypnotherapy and psychotherapy course, do full diploma, and you know, can qualify to do those things. And I was like, what? And it was all very seamless, like a conversation with the principal, conversation with course leaders, end up on the course. So by the time the book came out, I had just started the course. And I had already strongly held views about what hypnotherapy was. My first thing was that I wanted to be a psychotherapist, and I wanted to be able to, you know, have clients and work with them and help them through process, work with families, adults and children, and kind of do the full thing. My beliefs around hypnotherapy was Darren Brown, Paul McKenna. Very much like, when my finger goes, you're gonna be asleep, and yeah, this and that. And I was just like, this is just all a bit, But I thought, let me try it and see what this looks like. And entering the course, the first stage of it is hypnotherapy, to train as hypnotherapist. The next stage is as counselor and then psychotherapist. And I was like, wow, the kind of things, because we had to undergo hypnotherapy ourselves as a way to accessing the information and the kind of the inner worlds that we have, and powerful stuff. You know, looking at your timeline, bringing yourself back to a place, understanding where you're at physically, and bringing yourself back to
the body.
Bring yourself back to the body, reconnecting the mind
and the body.
Being able to tap into that subconscious part of you that allows you to, you know, access the memories, because the client is always in control. That's the thing.
Yeah.
We're kind of taught that when you're hypnotized, somebody else is in control of you and you're not in control. The client is always in control. There are people who abuse their power.
Of course.
This is, you know... But you're very much in control of your senses, of your things. You're just accessing areas of yourself that are you know, pretty that we've been conditioned to ignore.
And block out.
And block out. So, but traditionally, hypnotherapy is traditionally there to help support with anxiety.
Okay.
Sleeping can be helped with trauma, phobia.
Yeah.
Weight loss, weight management, smoking is typically the big one. The big one was smoking, but now it's looking like it's going to be weight and body issues going forward.
More
people are no longer not really smoking like that as they used to, but now we're looking at body dysphoria and stuff. So, yeah, that's kind of where it is.
And so what were some of the things that you had observed within men moving through a space of like learning to love or desiring connection in the UK that triggered that desire to be a hypnotherapist?
Right, So in my continuing journey towards becoming a psychotherapist, with the hypnotherapy, what I am finding is that there are a lot of men who are disjointed. When I say disjointed, because I've been there.
Yeah.
That kind of compartmentalizing of ourselves and putting it just in that box over there. We ain't touching that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, blocking out, mental blocking out of experiences, and then not knowing what the experience is when it shows up in, as we mentioned earlier, about arguments and parenting and situations. So when it comes to men, I just felt like I'm looking at the importance of self-awareness.
Yeah.
The importance of just really kind of getting to have these conversations with the inner child, but, you know, the inner boy, because obviously I'm speaking to him and I'm like, inner boy, you know, what was that boy like?
How do you think men's perspectives on sex affects intimacy from the things that you've observed or actually having meaningful connection? Because like you said, everyone's trying to move towards connection, but there is, particularly with black men in the UK, a lot of the things that have been projected onto them is a hypersexuality, is an exoticism and an eroticism. How do you think that has impacted, whether it's through your therapeutic practice or through just observation? Intimacy.
I had experience with a client and it was around fertility. And it was around feelings of failure for being able to create a child with their partner. And I was just like, and there's a lot of shame there. So it becomes this thing where when it comes to sex, it's pleasurable up to a certain point until there has to be an end result for every, and the end result is usually the man reaching climax and then done.
And then that's it. Party done,
sleep in, whatever. Or if they're in a heterosexual relationship or with a woman or somebody with a womb and a baby is created, that's the end result.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a bit like, oh, well, are we looking at one another? Are we engaging in that level of connection each time, you know? Like, is it a thing where you can't turn me on, so therefore you're wrong or you're bad? I can't perform in the way that you believe that I should be performing, so therefore I'm a bad X, Y, and Z. But then it's usually flipped around to the other person not being able to do that for you.
Oh, it comes into feelings of, I guess, rejection for some people. And so it did, like, hits into a deeper thing of not what is happening in that moment. Person might just be tired. Everyone's out here grinding, doing 10 billion jobs. It's not every day, go, go, go.
It's a stressful life.
I think sometimes, or from what I've seen with friends or conversations that I've had with friends, there's a feeling of rejection or hurt, or, oh, there isn't a closeness, or like eye contact and intimacy and like fear of that in particular spaces because you don't want to get hurt. And I think that's it's really, really interesting to consider the human in that and not just the sexualized being.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much.
Birding's the one.
There's so much. And I just think, like, I feel like, and one thing I've had to teach myself and coach myself on, you know, like Issa Rae in the mirror.
Yeah,
you know, she's got a rapper. I've got a spoken word poet.
I'm not the spoken word poet, no.
But it's a conversation to coach myself into believing that I'm worthy of things.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to feel things.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to be a particular way today, you know?
Yeah. I'm allowed to consent.
Yeah, I'm allowed to say yes to this and no to that, and I can make those choices and hold them.
Yeah.
And I can also be flexible with those choices.
100.
So, you know, I have to remind myself that because sometimes, you know, from my thinking as the eldest child, as somebody who's taking on a lot of this responsibility, I have to kind of really coach myself sometimes.
Yeah.
The same way I would coach my friend, the same way I'd coach a sibling, but I'd coach myself.
Word. Hold tight, take that tool, coach yourself, talk in the mirror, pretend you're Issa Rae, and pump up yourself. Another thing that really pumps me up is music. So I want to chat music real quick. And I believe it's one of the, like, I guess, the most important insights into what a culture is currently experiencing and believing about themselves and about others. And I know you're big into your books and your music, but what is the relationship being like on a healing journey with music and learning, like, to love through music?
There's a moment where, as we mentioned earlier, I went back into, you know, Lover's Rock. I was very much with Beres Hammond and Morgan Heritage and Peter Huddingale and Gregory Isaacs and all that stuff. And then, you know, soca, and just really kind of bringing myself, when I need energy, bring it. Okay, when I need energy bringing up, soca goes on.
And hips. Get the trauma out the hips.
Get lower back, spinal.
Bracket ancestor.
Yeah, bracket ancestor. Then also, you know, if you throw on Tony Braxton.
If
you throw on Tony Braxton.
My cousin were learning the dances. We used to live together. I'd be like, he was a man enough for me. Incredible scenes. Hold tight, Tony.
Yeah, and I always think about the lyrics to that song, and I'm just always thinking, like, wow, she really came, and she really came on violence.
It wasn't like, violence. No, it was tender love and care.
The person who came to her was basically like, stay out of my man's business. She's like, excuse me? She's like, excuse me? Hold on, let me tell you, okay?
I don't business with that man. A man is for the streets.
But even like, even the song Be a Man About It, by like, why are you calling up on the phone telling me you're not at home? Just be a man about all this different stuff.
And
I was just listening to, I just listened to a lot of these lyrics now. Pop Your Colour by Usher, Burn, Let It Not Burn. His whole Confessions album is just a love story in itself. And I just think to myself, like, yeah, there are real bodies of work out there. But the one song I really like, Gang Over Love, Brent Faiyaz.
Oh, not our toxic king.
Is he toxic?
I feel like he's in tune with his emotions, but he would also use them for violence.
Okay.
Do you understand?
His
perspective. He's one of those men who go to therapy the first time, learn the language to gaslight, and then he just needs a couple more phases of therapy. Like, he'll come back.
What I'm receiving right now is that you're transferring
your projections
and
onto
the projections
me.
Onto me. And I'm not holding that. I've been present. For
Are you
your
trying
trauma.
To gaslight me whilst he's gaslighting you.
For your trauma.
Bumba clock.
And your stuff.
Not the stuff, not the finger movements.
And my stuff. I don't have stuff.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway, I love Gang Over Love.
It's an incredible song. I do love me some Brim.
I love Gang Over Love simply because it reminds me of just that transition from late teen, early 20s sort of thing. And then you're kind of like reminiscing what that was like with your friends growing up. You know, we were hella broke then, you know, all of this stuff. We're still broke now, but hella broke then. And
we are
different.
Building. Mm-hmm. We're different. Yeah. Abundance is coming. We're not broke.
It's here.
Or broken.
Abundance is here. We just need the key. The key's not The keys out.
Come through.
but that's a really fun song for me to really tap back into, because it's a question. It reminds me of kind of where I was, where I am, where I'm going, and stuff. And it's just like, I would love to be able to kind of. And I was saying to my best friend the other day, I was just like, you know what, I really cannot wait for. And as much as I'm being present now and I'm really enjoying now, I can't wait for when we're like 40, 50, and there may be children, there might not be children, there may be spouses, there may not be spouses, there may be whatever, but we're sitting down, reasoning,
and
looking back and being like, oh, yeah, remember when we were 20 and we were stressing about
when we were 27? Remember that dusty ass?
Like, do you remember when?
Yeah.
And then we can laugh and sit back and think, people, like, look at our problems now. What problems? The problems are different, but you know what I'm saying?
That's
what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah.
But I'm also very kind of really trying to stay grounded in what's here.
In a minute, we're going to get you to read an excerpt from your book. But before that, we are going to jump into a little game called Love or a Dub. So I'm going to explain how the game works. And basically, in this segment of the podcast, I'm going to ask my lovely guest, Alex, his thoughts on a variety of scenarios or sentences. And he's going to tell us whether he thinks it's an example of love in truth or a dub, aka some bullshit, and why. So I'm going to go through, I think I've got like 5 scenarios. And I'll just quick fire them, and you have to be at love or a dub.
Oh, so straight away?
Yeah.
No thought. Okay.
And then we can think after we've said it, because we're listening to our bodies. We're going to gut feeling first, and then we'll unpack.
Okay.
All right, love and a dub number one. Unfollowing people you know but don't want on your TL, love or a dub?
Love.
Tell me more.
You don't need to see. Okay, so I don't have Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did have Twitter, I don't need to see people's streams of thoughts.
Louder.
Because, and people don't need to see my streams of thoughts. I remember, I'll never forget one time, I was running for the bus and I was tweeting.
No.
I can't believe I'm running for that bus. I'm like, do people need to know this?
I'm screaming.
There's sometimes, and it feeds back to what is it? Like, I mean, I have friends who unfollowed me because, and then friends who have told me things. We're projecting quite a bit, but their friends tell me, you're not the same on Twitter as you are in real life, and I'd rather just not. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, see me IRL then.
I thought I was being congruent, but it's all right. But I really wasn't being congruent, because what am I doing running
for the bus and tweeting?
I'm screaming. For me, I feel like if you don't like what you see, if you don't like what you're seeing, you have a personal responsibility.
Word.
To clear that from your space. That doesn't mean that you don't like or love the person.
It's just take care of yourself.
Right.
It is the form of self-preservation,
and you know,
which is therefore love.
Yeah.
We'll go on to the next example, because we are quick firing. Saying men are trash, love or a dub?
Dub?
Not the dub. Tell me more. I was the top warrior for men are trash. I've grown through it.
You know what? I would say.
But I want to hear you.
I remember writing an essay about this. But I would say that whenever we say men are trash, that requires an explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's just a way, it's a big way of alienating or kind of really putting a stopper in the conversation before the conversation can be had. Because a lot of men are going to be like, what do you mean I'm trash?
It goes straight to defense.
And I'm like
sensationalist.
And
news.
I'm like, okay, cool. Like, just rest. It's all right. Like,
so cool.
Let's look at the issue is the wider thing. So I could say love, but I was just thinking to myself, like, do I want people to feel bad about themselves straight away without there being a conversation as to what that looks like? Some people are just at that level of awareness just yet. But
it's very reactive, and trust me, as men are trash is number one foot soldier.
But you know what?
Go on.
And that's men's problem.
That they're reactive
and not responsive.
Yeah.
Because my thing is always the question. Okay, so why do you say men are trash? Now. When I was 25, I was like, oh, I'm not trash. Why are you going to say that I'm trash for? Because I've not reached that level of maturation to understand that people are coming from a particular place. Yeah. It might not be hateful.
And I'd be interested.
It might just be facts.
Word. Oh my God. So sometimes it's big facts, but the way that it affects self-esteem and then what that then can go on to trigger, because men are still humans. The way that we internalize things, everyone just be internalizing things, and that it stays with you. We are going to go on to the next example, though, but hold that thought because we're supposed to be quick firing, but you know, I like to chat. Ugh. All right, number three in Love or a Dub. Mm-hmm. Keeping friends around you who continue to project their insecurities onto you. Love or a dub?
It's a dub for you.
Ooh.
And
tell me more, therapist.
When we say that they're projecting their own insecurities onto us, we have to be able to understand what our boundaries are for that, because it really depends on whether we can hold that. If we know in ourselves that we are secure, that we are X, Y, and Z, and you know that we're not going to leave them,
yeah,
we're not going to
abandon
them, or we're not going to X, Y, and Z. And there's a difference in responding and saying, okay, I don't like that's happening for you, and I don't want that to come and interfere with our friendship. And I don't, there's that. And then there's a difference between saying, oh, how can I help you with that? How can I X, Y, and Z? I want you to feel better and all this different stuff. It's a personal boundary. You have to understand where the line is drawn with you and where the line is drawn with them, and how we can kind of create a way of them building up to become more secure.
Yeah.
Then, you know. So yeah, I'd say it's a dub. If you keep them around you, but it's really draining you, then it's a dub for you.
Mm.
Keep them around you and you're secure and you're really, and it's a process of being patient with them to get to where they need to be, and you don't waver because you're okay, you've got your other spaces, then that's a love for you. But it just, you know, it doesn't always work that easily.
On that note, if you haven't read Nedra Tawab's Set Boundaries, Find Peace, do that right now.
She kills me.
Number four, Love or a Dub, work environments calling themselves families. We have such a family environment. We're all one big family.
Dub.
Love or a dub?
That's a dub.
Well, like it.
Because it's capitalism. I'm literally there by force.
No, literally. To keep this roof over my head.
I'm there to fund the phone that you're texting me on in this WhatsApp group about work. I'm there to fund that.
Whoa, whoa. Love or a dub? Solange beating up Jay-Z in an elevator. I know it's time ago. We're going to revisit.
Man.
I know that's right.
That's love.
Tell us more.
Because I have a sister. Number one, and I know my sister would fight for me.
Yeah.
You know, I have siblings and I know I'd fight for them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, violence isn't always the answer, but it gives you the response you need.
I mean, you know, as much as I do not condone domestic abuse or any type of battery, some people forget their manners and just small need a backhand every now and then. Let me not talk.
Yeah, because when it comes to violence with the intention of, as I said, punching down, power, you know, that can stay in a box and go over there. We don't need that.
Be put in a spliff.
You disrespecting my sister and me and you are peers.
Oh, wow.
I might have to just drapes you up, you know.
I 100%.
I can't even lie. I'm not saying, you know what I mean? But does it mean, you know, that was a funny video though. I was trying to find the clip of Beyonce moving the dress out of the way. Because I needed to make a point, and that was like the perfect thing. I couldn't find it. Someone has it somewhere, please send it to me.
Yeah, please, archivist, come through. We need your help. So that was Love or a Dub. Thank you so much. I love playing that game because I think there are so many like real life little scenarios that we can't necessarily discern at the moment to just figure out like, is this loving practice? Is this an ethic? Is this how I want to move on? We are rapidly coming to the end of our conversation, but it's been so, so lovely to chat to you, Alex. I wanted to kind of end the podcast before we chat about where we can find you and where we can find out more about what you're doing, to just read an excerpt of Time to Talk that you think is urgent and that people should hear right now.
So the bit I'm going to read is in the last chapter. And it was about friendship. And I've been having a lot of conversations about men and friendship lately, recently, over the past few years. And this is what I kind of concluded. I feel very grateful that I now have a set of friends who give me such a strong sense of emotional safety. Space is held for me when I need it, as well as me holding space for them when they need it. In this way, we all get to experience a deep sense of love, belonging, and connection in our relationships. We are there to hold each other up as we go through life's ebbs and flows. We are there to support each other, not drain each other of energy, to cheer one another on, not knock one another down, to pick each other up when we fall without embarrassment or shame. And I just conclude with, be courageous, be you, be me, continually be there for one another. Be present and make sure you are listening as well as talking. Give love and support, as well as being open to receive love and support. Strong friendships can be a game changer in life, allowing us to feel truly loved and to show up as our best self in the world. Let's really value our friendships and let our friends know how much we love them and value them.
Ami, thank you so much for coming on the show, Alex. It's honestly been a pleasure. And just on that last note, it is also scientifically proven that the strength and intimacy of your relationships will enable you to live longer. I don't know who I am. Anyway, thank you so much, Alex. Where can the peoples then find you and what have you got coming up?
The people can find me, you lovely people can find me. Everything I have is alexholmes.co. So I decolonized the domain name. .com.co.uk. I wanted just .co.
Ooh.
So alexholmes.co is where you can find everything where I'm at. But I'm on Instagram at byalexholmes, B-U-I Alex Holmes. And the podcast is shifting into a new phase. Right now, and that's changing very soon. But subscribe, it'll be on the same feed. So if you go head over to Time to Talk as it is right now, you can be kept updated as to what is happening there. And if you head over to alexholmes.substack.com, you can join my Substack publication. Yeah, and that's where you can find all the things.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And all of you, man, go and buy Time to Talk, How Men Think About Love, Belonging and Connection by the one and only Alex Holmes. That's all we've got time for on today's episode of Notes on Loving. I hope you guys enjoyed. And to find out more, follow me, Alia Hasina, at Alia Hasina and at black.curatorial on Instagram or Black Curatorial on Twitter. No spaces, no spots on Twitter, even though we don't really use it, because what is that space? This podcast, Notes on Loving, was produced by Nello for Black Curatorial in partnership with Transmission Radio. Hosting created by myself, Alia Hasina, and produced by myself, Alia Hasina, and Waylon Mackenzie Ritter. Hold tight, you man. Have a blessed rest of your day, and stay loving.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp. This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.